football on Off the Ball.
And sadly, Irish football, out of the 55 federations, when you line them all up, is the third most underperforming nation.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
He's got a goal!
The Saints are marching on with three wins on the trot after a shaky start in the SSE Electricity Premier Division.
The ball comes in and they score from the free kick. Would you believe it?
Heading down the rocky road to Dublin to face St Pat's this Friday night are Doherty United.
Conor Keighley rises once again.
Doherty's men are in the doghouse after two defeats in their last two matches. Will the informed James Brown help the Saints get payback after two home draws against the Louthmen last year?
Brilliant performance for St Pat's tonight.
Vinnie Perth will be with Phil Egan at Richmond Park. It's the League of Ireland. It's live and exclusive on Off the Ball from 7 on Friday night.
That was a superb bit of play.
League of Ireland on Off the Ball.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Dara, good morning to you.
Hey, Ger.
Adrian, good morning to you. Are we allowed to like the Triple Crown?
Yeah, no, I think we reversed back into the Triple Crown being really important again. Yeah.
It's always been a great honour.
And definitely something that people talk about internally, but I do think that we got nearly above our station, you might say. Nearly arrogant, you could almost offer, that we were kind of winning Six Nations every other year, a couple of Grand Slams here and there. Definitely in that environment, I do understand why the Triple Crown becomes less important. But given what happened in round one, we're all over it.
Yeah. Best of the rest, as you might phrase it.
Well, we could end up winning it, sure. You don't think we're going to thread that needle this weekend?
I don't think we're going to thread
that needle. I don't think so either.
I think that France will just take care of business. It's really interesting that Steve Borthwick has just said, right, if I'm going down, you're coming down with me, lads, and picked essentially the same team.
Strange.
Yeah.
It's commitment to the bit. And I do think it is ultimately going to kill him as the head coach, that after this they'll be like, look, you made a lot of changes, the team didn't improve, you stuck with the same team, the team didn't improve. And that's obviously assuming that France take care of business and whack them, which I think they will.
Do you think? I think they'll cause them trouble now, to be honest. England, I'm even after the Scotland loss and then us hammering them and now Italy getting over them for the first time, I kind of still think that England will just go out and put out a great performance against France for absolutely no reason. It's just a very England thing to do, to get up for France.
And what would that great performance look like, Dara? Losing by 12 points? I mean that genuine.
I think going into the last 10 minutes, game is still up in the air.
In the mixer,
yeah,
in the hopper.
I think so, yeah.
But then France still do what France do and put up 30 points in the last 4 minutes.
I'm honestly 50-50 on the result.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Based on?
Well, I don't think France still put 40 points up away from home against Scotland, so that's still pretty impressive, but not at the form they were against us, you would say. I just think England have something about them that they will go and put out a good performance.
Jesus, fair play.
They haven't really hit form at all. This
comment is getting clipped for Monday morning.
That's grand, yeah. Well, there's no losing.
I mean, in the positive sense.
There's absolutely no losing in it for me.
No, that's what I mean. That's exactly what I'm saying. South Africa are obviously looking around themselves going, right, just tiptoe gently into the next 18 months.
You're all useless.
Who's with
this
me?
This is ours. Yeah. South Africa, need to say, are odds on to win the next World Cup. Not a million miles away from France, who they're obviously looking at going, all right.
Thanks, Scotland.
Suddenly.
Now, they do have the players to be able to do what Scotland did, but do they have the, okay, we won't just wrestle you to death and drown you in the deep water?
South Africa.
Yeah.
I just don't see them ever conceding 50 points. Do you know what I mean? Like, Dara's point is interesting because I have a similar sense that it must be a blip with France, right? It'll never happen again.
Scoring 50 though.
Yeah.
So when South Africa play France, will they adopt what Scotland did or will they just do what they've always done?
Yeah. Probably do what they always done.
That's what I think. Suddenly that actually becomes a different game for France where they don't have to defend the way they had to defend against Scotland and couldn't.
Yeah.
So it actually, styles make fights. Look, Would you make South Africa heavy favourites to beat anybody they play in any match?
Of course.
Every time they play, all the way up to the World Cup final, yes.
Could France beat anybody on their day? Also, yes.
Yeah.
Not many other teams. How many other teams do you give a chance against this current South Africa?
Dave Rennie's New Zealand are untested.
They're a couple of tests away from that now. They'll have to play them a few times before they're up to their level.
In fairness,
again.
There's a lot of information will come to light from that three test series, the greatest rivalry in rugby.
But here, beyond that,
what are the Lions looking at that going, hang on, what?
They're the top three, right? Fourth favourites to win the next Rugby World Cup?
Ireland.
England.
Are they?
Yeah.
It is a good time to be Australia, kind of failing Ireland right now. Unless, well, to be fair, if they get rid of Borthwick, you're kind of starting from scratch. If they stick with him, his contract is post World Cup, which at this stage looks unlikely that he will be hanging around. It's a good time to start again in terms of he needs to find his best 15.
They have to get rid of him. They have to.
You think?
England have to get rid of Borthwick. There is no point in sticking. That is just a fallacy of sunk cost. Like, they fluked their way to being respectable at the last World Cup, bearing in mind that it took like 6 drop goals from George Ford, and they were like, oh, this is our new, this is who we are now, it's our identity. And it's like, oh, splat. And they went on a slightly jammy run of wins that they completely misinterpreted as, oh, we're back. And then everybody watched what they did and went, okay, we see you. We've done the analysis on you. The fact he can't keep his backroom team together for longer than a wet week, like, he has to go. He's got nothing to recommend him.
Who's the replacement?
Well, you open it up and you see who applies, because it's one of the best jobs in world rugby. And
Raj?
You hire a world-class recruitment consultant who makes some phone calls to people, and you test the water and you see, you currently have a contract. Would you break that contract for X amount of money?
No.
For X squared? Maybe. You said, is that squared? Not two times. Yes. So.
It's a bit of a, like, for somebody like Raj, it's probably not the right, possibly the right job, given that he said before that he would take it, but at the wrong time. Like, you've got, it's too long a window, really, to leave with Borthwick, but too short a window for a new coach to come in and actually put their stamp on it. Is it 12 or 13 tests that are left? Something like that?
But it's one window less than Razzie had, and he won the World Cup.
I know, but it's an unfair. I heard somebody yesterday, where was it? They were comparing, we were somewhere yesterday and somebody was comparing their kid might not get to Messi level. Yeah. Do you remember? So I could apply the same logic here. It's an unfair benchmark. But if England do what Dara expects them to do this weekend, Borthwick's going nowhere.
I think it's all
on Saturday.
We'll come back to the rugby a little bit later on, because we've buried the lead this morning. I'm going to just give you some of a flavour of the headlines. Jeepers Keepers is the eye paper. Kinski subbed off after 17 minutes as pressure mounts on Spurs manager Tudor. Tottenham's tailspin. Tudor reign spirals out of control after keeper Kinski's horror show. Nobody's gone for the Natasha joke, but... Istanbul is the one with the Galatasaray Liverpool header on the Star, which maybe went to print early. They haven't got anything on that. That's not because they've got the Newcastle Barca. Gone in 17 minutes. Misery for Spurs goalie. Calamity. Too dire is to do is the headline. Spurs humiliated as boss. Keeper gamble backfires in Madrid. Boss keeper. Bosses. But it's with the apostrophe. I'm like, really? Is that what you're doing there? Okay, I see you. And then, kin hell. Calamity keeper hooked on 17 minutes after horror show. Now, there is some thought that he shouldn't have been hooked. Looking at you, Dara.
Yeah, I think...
and you, you're a little bit in this. You've come around too. I was like, fair play. Get him out of there. This could be 9-0. This could be American Samoa. You get him out.
Yeah, well, like, they still lost 5-2, so, you know, still got hammered, and they were never going to win that game.
Things did not get any worse from the 3-0, essentially. It's a two-legged tie.
In fairness, like, he made a couple of, like, really terrible, terrible errors. He's not going to make, like, 7 more of them in that game. You know, he's not going to slip 7 more times.
You don't know.
It's not like his style of play was off, and you're like, he does not fit that team. It was just like he kept, you know... fecking up like
they
and that's what it is. Bringing him off after 17 minutes was a Like that, he's never going to recover from that. Like that is just
doing a bit of googling last night. I think it was the earliest outside of there was a couple of Checkatrade trophies or Johnston Paint trophies where managers had made substitutions to get around rules after a couple of minutes. Then there'd been obviously a few injuries. Well, listen, you know, don't dig too deep. A few injuries, but other than that, I think it was the earliest substitution that I could find it tactically for a goalkeeper.
Yeah, that's right.
I think I agree with Dara. I think it was the wrong thing to do. Like he was culpable for two goals. Now he was terribly culpable for them.
Yeah,
right.
100% culpable.
All time howler. If you did one of them, it would live with you. Opening line of your obituary. This is the calamity goalkeeper who did that thing that time in Madrid. And you're like, oh yeah, okay.
I don't know.
It twice in 17 minutes, and obviously the rest of the team was looking around, going, oh my god. So. I think, look, your man's dead man walking anyway. But they actually played quite well afterwards. They got back into the game. They had chances. And then Mickey van de Ven, he should never play for Spurs again. He should have been sent off. I don't know if you saw the tackle.
Yeah.
He's off his feet. And the commentary comes through, oh, VAR is checking for red card. And Ali McGoys is like, he's gone. That is 100% three times on a Sunday a red card. Mm. And for whatever reason, they were like, look, you know, have you seen what happened with the goalkeeper? They just subbed him off after 17 minutes. We're just going to let this one die down a little bit here. It was like a junior B referee levelling things up again.
Yeah.
I do think Tottenham are an absolute disgrace of a team. Like, I do think the manager had to take it out, to be honest with you. Like, I think you've made your bed, buddy. You are the one who've put him in there, right? So I take your point, but I've made that decision. I've gone for it. I've understood his quality and I feel he's better than Vicario. It's turning out that might not be the case, but I can't do this to me or the team or the player particularly, you know.
They both shit the bed.
They did. And, you know, the fact that he came off the pitch.
But Tudor at Tudor least took responsibility.
Club, as somebody's called him on YouTube here, which I was searching for what that one might be this morning and I couldn't get it, but Tudor Absolute Cinema Club, thank you to our YouTube commenter, is the one. You got to acknowledge him on the way off the pitch. You have to acknowledge him.
Well, he was getting hammered by Joe Hart in commentary for that as well. And I think I would agree with that. And in fairness, some of his teammates did try and, but like, oof.
You mean the ones who were, so like if you go through it, right? Goal number one, he slips. That happens in football, right? And you are allowed one of those, okay? Like you're not getting the shepherd's hook after one of those. It does happen. And he possibly could have done more with the save even after that. But Van de Ven is in straight away, balling him out of it. Like, here is a young keeper.
22 years old.
On his Champions League debut. Was it his first ever outside of a Carabao Cup?
I think so, yeah.
I think it was his first ever start. Like, that is not the time to be going in and balling a 22-year-old out of it. For number two, two outfield players. And by the way, Mickey Van de Ven was one of them. Stevie G-style slip. In the lead into it, Jed Spence had made a balls of before that. He's not culpable at all for that. Number three, when he takes that back pass, he's positioned himself really badly in the box. He's too far away from his goal and it allows Julian Alvarez to put pressure on him. It does look very bad. I don't know, is he left-footed or right-footed? But he tries to sweep it away with his left foot. It does look like as if he, you know...
He's shot.
It doesn't look great. Grant you all of that. And that was straight from the kickoff. But just in terms of Tottenham and such a brutal team, that was straight from the kickoff, three back passes back to the goalkeeper straight from the kickoff.
Like, just to give him an early touch.
Well, there is.
Get him into the game.
Get him into the game, give him a bit of confidence.
You know,
get your eye in.
The old famous Jason McAteer story. Surely there should have been a few whispers up the pitch, keep it away from the goalkeeper. Like, lump it up the pitch. So I'm including a culpability for the team in that, albeit you know, it was a very high-profile thing. Number four, Vicario does, as now on the pitch, and he does make actually a good save for that fourth one. Watching. I'd watched the other match, so I was looking for the highlights, expecting Vicario to have done what Kinski did, but
makes a good save. It's actually a great save, yeah.
Can't keep out the follow-up. And number five then is a one-on-one with Julian Alvarez, and again, not much to be concerned
about. Did you see Griezmann's touch, the pass?
Oh, amazing.
It is unreal. Like.
Delish.
He was brilliant, and Alvarez class as
like
well.
I just think even from Tudor's point of view, if I'm trying to hold on, grasp on, grip on with my cold dead hands onto the vestige of a job that I have left there,
you're just waiting for them to
say the sub off.
How much are you giving me here? Yeah, okay.
He's interim, isn't he? End of the season. I mean, sorry, I was surprised he was still there this morning. If I'm being absolutely honest, I was kind of half expecting that.
It's his thing for me. It's him just like refusing to kind of take not accountability, but just to address any of the issues. In the last couple of games, after the game, he's asked, you know, about the pressure on you and all this type of thing, and he's just like, I don't want to talk about it. It's like, no, you have to. That's part of your job brief. Like, you have to address this and address the fans, and, you know, he just seems completely reluctant to do that. But we do have a clip here of his post-match after the game, if you want to play that here.
Even more than before. Maybe it sounds strange, but is it? I saw something in the team. I saw that there's something even now in the dressing room after the game.
On the red card, Van de Ven's been so consistent and good for this team. Do you think that's anything to do with the pressure from outside, the pressure of this game that causes him to make that decision?
We need to stop to speak about pressure. This is not the topic to speak about. But
do you not feel as if there is pressure now, 1 point above relegation? It's not, I knew you knew this job was going to be difficult, but does that not come with pressure?
Not speak anymore about pressure.
Okay, thank you.
Why not?
It's such a big part of a manager's job to front up afterwards and actually address these things, and often in the most flim-flam fashion. But yeah, I don't think you get to say, I'm just not going to. He was at the same crack, was it against Palace the weekend, where he gets asked after the game about exact same thing, pressure. I don't speak about that.
Yeah.
I see somebody, he was asked about it in the press conference, and I see Edward Freeman making the point here on YouTube that Romero went over to him to tell him to take him off. His head was gone and he was liable to make many more errors. He had to take him off. He was, Tudor was asked about that afterwards. Was it Romero come over and told you to take him off?
Yeah.
I think he gave some similar version of the, I don't speak about that.
Oh, sorry. So it was Romero was actually saying you had to get rid of him.
This was the insinuation.
Well, fair play to Romero, I think. Look, I think, especially if one of your teammates saying he's lost his head, he has to go, they make the decision, the new keeper comes on, plays well. Mm. I give them a free pass for that. Picking him in the first place, turns out, bad idea. There were, in fairness, there were Spurs fans online going, oh, when he costs us three goals, take two walks to me then. I'm like, yeah, fair enough. It's pretty prescient. I hope you gambled on it.
It would have been very on brand for Tudor to have actually said, yeah, Romero had a chat, and you know the collective feeling was this guy should come on. That would have been really on brand. I don't know why he didn't lean into that a bit more. Save his gig for another few days.
Are you surprised that he hasn't met with, so it's 7:47 this morning, that he still has a job?
Just check Twitter here before I answer this question.
We haven't had a snap yet to say
was it Owen possibly a couple of days ago talking about, they were laughing about Harry Redknapp, or was it on Breakfast, getting the call while he's at Cheltenham? Like, the odds on that have surely shortened massively. Like, somebody to come in, do a job, give them a bit of a G up of confidence. Like, that's now the number one job. Forget about tactics and all that sort of, you know, peripheral stuff.
Well, we were having that conversation yesterday. It's vibes alone. One of the lads from The Athletic was speaking about that, and it's vibes alone that can save Spurs at this point. And vibes with a bit of organisation, you know, a challenge to Mickey van de Ven to stop being so self-destructive, stop shooting himself in the foot, stop shooting the club in the foot. Because if he got sent off last night, then it could have been nine.
Yeah.
I do think you have to think of a worst case scenario where the guy's completely lost his head and that spreads through the rest of the team. You know, if you get a historic humiliation in Madrid, 5-2, weirder things have happened than teams coming back from a 3-0 deficit in a knockout stage of European competition.
Like, what odds would you get Tottenham coming back from from the brink here? Tudor is sitting down with the owners this morning going, lads, it's still on, still on.
5-1 win. Well, at home, to be fair, yeah.
Obviously
you never know.
It's outrageous, right? And the odds are completely stacked against you. But if it goes to nine, no one's, it's like, oh, no one's getting a job again.
Yeah.
You know the way we were saying who's going to sign Van de Ven? I was like, everybody wants him in their team and in their squad. Just this attitude right now.
That's what I was saying yesterday. I don't know. His stock is going down in my eyes. Like, this is when things get tough, this is how you act.
He's going to have to do a rehabilitation job where he goes somewhere reasonable, like a, I don't know, mid-table team, and has a good season and shows us his form, his pace, all of that again.
Van de Ven.
Yeah.
He's going to do Rashford, is what's going to happen there. He's going to go to a way bigger club and, Rashford was over a much longer period of time with probably bigger question marks ultimately over him, and thrive,
yeah.
Like, I think what's happening at Tottenham is such a stink show that people just can't wait to get out of there.
Yeah.
Well. You know, like it's hard to be even average at a club that are backtracking at a rate of at lightning speed.
Yeah.
It'd be hard to get out of it. You watched the Newcastle game.
Yeah.
Newcastle were pretty good.
Newcastle were unbelievable. Like I was saying before the show started, it was hard to, if you sort of blurred your eyes a little bit to confuse the jerseys, there's no way you would have thought it was Newcastle on one side and Barcelona on the other. They were all over them. How it was only 1-0 after 94 minutes with 4 minutes of added time was phenomenal. And then right at the end, one moment of brilliance, Malik Thau was totally done by who I think was Dani Olmo. Little bit of a jink in the box. Thiago sticks out the leg. Classic, you know, jink to win the penalty, and clear penalty it was. It stroked home by Lamine Yamal, who was amongst many Barcelona players who, you know, you didn't really hear an awful lot from. They were very, very quiet. Rafinha. But yeah, just it was like just a really intense Newcastle. Somebody mentioned vibes earlier on. It was really vibes night. Like they were, it just seemed like Barcelona. You watched the first 5, 10, 15 minutes and you felt, well, this pace is unsustainable. And Barcelona are totally out of this game, and it turns out it was really sustainable. And I think if Newcastle have had somebody like the quality of striker they had last season, that maybe this would have been, could have been, should have been 3 or 4 nil. It was that dominant.
They will regret that forever if they don't go through.
Big case to be made that, you know, they probably won't, I suppose, would be the thing. Like, it's hard to see Barcelona doing that. Two games in a row, very different atmosphere, obviously, in Barcelona. I'd be really interested to get Graham's thoughts on it later on, but like it just felt as if they were powerless. Newcastle coming at them in waves. I know. Outrageous stuff, but definitely deserved. Like, as I said, I felt at 1-0 they would absolutely have been kicking themselves that they hadn't a bigger advantage to take back. So it feels like it's just such a huge, totally undeserved momentum swing in Barcelona's favour. And by the way, sorry, again, at the end, you have all these scenes of, which was the same in the Liverpool game, you had McAllister, Slot, and one other player going up to the referee, balling them out of it at the end. I've made this point previously, and it's a hill I'm absolutely willing to die on and to repeat ad nauseum until something is done about it. Get the referees off the pitch at the end. This...
like who?
Staged drama that's been set up at the end with the referees waiting at the centre circle and people line up to give them volleys of abuse, basically, is what's happening. Every single game now, winners come up, shake hands, jokey jokey, losers come up, often run up, and then obviously end up getting sent off. But, you know, with the express intention of a performative bawling the referee out of it.
You think that the like stewards on match day should escort them? I guess what the whole point of it is to try and avoid access from the two teams.
And I do get that, but it's actually not serving the point. It's doing the opposite because I'm trying to think. Nuno last weekend.
It's supposed to make you less likely to go on the pitch and scream at somebody when you're in full glare of the camera, right?
Daniel Farke after the City game. Runs up. So they're all doing... Do you remember Nathan used to talk about Vincent Kompany? He's always waiting for the cameras to be on him and then he's, you know, taking the glory. I never really agreed with that
point.
He's
changed tune now, has he? Young manager in Europe, isn't he?
There you go. Yeah. I kind of feel that there is a similar element to this, that everybody knows the camera's on them. I need to go up and tell the referee what I'm thinking. And I just think there's a performative aspect to it that I do take your point, particularly that like it's hard for the referees to get off the pitch in a way that they're not scurrying or being like brought off by, because the blood is up, the anger is on at the end of a match.
One of the rugby referees ran off that time. Was it one of the South Africans after the Scotland game? Remember they botched the penalty in the World Cup and he legged it off.
Get the hell out of there. So there can be a bit of that that's, you know, not a great look and can be, from a safety point of view, a bit dangerous. But I just think that they need to find another way of doing it. Daniel Farke comes out at the weekend, runs over to the referee, gets sent off on his way, running over to the referee, balls him out of it, had to be dragged away from the referee by his goalkeeper and the Welsh captain, Leeds, whose dad has an Irish connection. I'll come back to it. Somebody will tell me in YouTube.
Ampadu.
Had to be dragged away, right? So there's all this performative nature to it. And then 3 seconds later is over joking with Pep Guardiola. Like, that wasn't, what you just did there was not real.
Well, so I can be angry at him, but happy with you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just think there was like, my view is there's a performative nature.
What did you do now?
Yeah.
You need to.
Pedro Porro had that as well after the Palace game when he got subbed off. Like, he had a shocking game.
And he was slapping
the sleep. But as soon as he was pulled off the pitch, he was full of passion. It was like, all right, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Craig Joubert at the end of the Scotland-Australia World Cup quarterfinal. Scotland come out of nowhere to nearly beat them.
Oh, yeah.
And then Joubert gives Australia a penalty. They, I think they kick it and win or else.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Sorry, Dermot Keenan is making the point. The ref in the Liverpool game was a disgrace. Every touch in the box was a free and card happy. You're totally entitled to think the referee was a disgrace. I'm not arguing that point, but what I am saying is this performative thing of going up to the referee as a matter of course now for anybody who's lost a game or feels in any way aggrieved, it has to stop.
Kudos to the people in the comments who were like, oh, that's the wrong Igor Tudor video. It was the one that was him basically. There's a pattern emerging here. This is from last night. Have a look.
No, it happened very rare. Things in, I'm coaching 15 years, I never do like this thing. It was necessary to preserve the guy, preserve the team. Incredible situation. Nothing to comment, you see. It was before the game, right choose to do, right choice to do in the moment like we are, with pressure on Vicario, another competition. Toni's very good goalkeeper. So it was, for me, right decision.
Do you think you deserve to carry on as manager?
No comment.
Yeah.
That would fill you with confidence, yeah.
Senior hurling now is the problem. Look, everybody says he's out of his depth. And I mean, he's obviously not a complete moron. You know,
no.
He's put together a reasonable CV of...
I hate going for the out of your depth thing. I think it's a real football snobbish thing. But
it's a difficult scenario that he has inherited, and he's the wrong man at the wrong time. So look, maybe it is, I don't know, Ledley King plus a coach gives you the same vibes aspect.
Harry plus one, like...
Glenn Hoddle plus was the other...
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Glenn Hoddle obviously
does he still have a good touch?
He's had heart issues.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if that...
Glenn famously wanted to tell everybody else how good he is. That could be part of the difficulty there, given what he's dealing with. But a bit of a Martin O'Neill character, surely,
yeah,
now.
Yeah, well, there's almost no choice now. You know, Ryan Mason doesn't want to be the one to take them down. John Duggan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ger, Adrian and Dara.
Do you want to talk about it?
Well, Chatham's been great. Really great first day. You know, Lassie Mouth won the champion hurdle. We had more people here than me last year. And Chatham, you know, is the antidote. It's the vibrancy antidote to the apathy that destroys your soul when you talk about Tottenham Hotspur. Please sell the club. Just please sell the club, Enoch. 25 years. Enough is enough. Sell the club.
Yeah, if they go down, they won't get the money they think that they want.
No. And that would be well deserved for them, because they've run an entertainment hub with Beyonce concerts and NFL games and very expensive tickets, where if you try to sit beside somebody, you can only buy one ticket for one seat and you can't get two together. And, you know, the fish and chips is beautiful and there's lovely beer and everything, but it's not football. It's not a football club anymore. And we're seeing that the 17th last season and now probably going down, because with the way Nottingham Forest and West Ham are playing in the Premier League recently, Tottenham have just sunk like a stone. They have no confidence. The players don't have any confidence. I don't think the dressing room is great. And the manager, off with his head.
Yeah, immediately on the fly home.
Shooter. I mean, that was the joke, but yeah, no. Look, I think they've got to get somebody, like as the lads are saying there, Martin O'Neill type. You need a motivator. You need probably somebody who's maybe a recent player and get somebody in. Like, this is a dressing room that has no confidence, that needs the arm around the shoulder, that needs to just be told by maybe one of their ex-peers that, look, guys, you're fighting for your own reputations here, your own careers. Mickey van de Ven, Christian Romero. These guys got to realize that their own reputations are going to suffer if Tottenham go down here. And I think they need an ex-player, somebody who's been recently involved in the game, to say, lads, look, we just got to roll up our sleeves and try and survive. They're actually not in the relegation zone. You think they'd be last in the Premier League the way they've been playing, but they're still not in the relegation zone. They still have a chance of getting out of this. But the trends would suggest, a bit like Leeds in 2004, they are going to be in the Championship next season. How many fans are going to be at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium next season for that? I won't be.
Yeah, and look, it took Leeds a very long time to get back to anything approaching where they were before that. So, you know, you would think that the money that the club has had would protect them for a period of time, but there's no guarantees, I suppose, in football. You mentioned Lossiemouth, an incredible triumph yesterday, galloping up the hill, proving that she can put it up to the best of the lads, and the birth of, maybe not the birth, but the coronation of a superstar.
Yes, four Cheltenham wins in a row, Jer, is pretty special. Quivega did it six times in a row, but to come here 4 years in a row and win, like, for racing fans and sports fans, everybody loves a mare back to Don Run, and a grey mare as well, and she's a horse that really gives her all, and she ran in the Triumph Hurdle, the juvenile hurdle here 4 years ago. And won, and then she won two mares hurdles, and she won the champion hurdle yesterday easily. She was, and the market always is something to follow in racing, because the market was very strong for Lossiemouth. Obviously, the vibes in Close Sutton and Carlo about her well-being were very good. And William Mullins, I spoke to him after the race yesterday, and he was trying to describe what Lossiemouth's journey has been like. And if you think about the champion hurdle as a 200-meter race in athletics, Lossiemouth in her early career was also running too fast, too hard, maybe 100-meter pace for the first 100 meters of the 200. So they needed to calm her down, to settle her down. And then they were almost running her over 400 meters. And then what happened was she was getting too relaxed. So they needed to bring her back to a position where it could use her speed over the 200 meters in the inverted commas of the champion hurdle. They put a cheek pieces on her yesterday to help her. And she really then hit the mark in terms of her right distance for the champion hurdle, and an easy win over brighter days ahead. Three Irish winners yesterday, four for the UK, so that was good for the home team. The other Irish winners, Cargeesy for Willie Mullins, who capitalised on a couple of jumping mistakes from Lulamba and Kopec Debord in the Arkle chase. And Padraig Roach, who's got less than 20 horses in training. He's the son of Christy Roach, the ex-Irish champion flat jockey, sent out. Saratoga, well done, Johnny Ward. His nap of the day, 10-1 winner on the race in pods, Saratoga. My horse is the non-runner, and Tom Malone's was third, Quebec was. So I think any kind of each-way double or treble would have paid off for you folks if you followed the naps yesterday. So happy out.
And anybody who wants to get all of your tips nestling in their inbox can get it by signing up for the Racing Club, offtheball.com/Racing Club Pod.
Racing Pod Club.
Racing Pod Club. Oof, there you go. Today, there's loads of small trainers up against the absolute superstars. I think there's an Irish trainer with a couple of horses. There's an Irish trainer with like a single digit or a low double digit. And then obviously you still have the Man Uniteds and the Barcelonas and the Real Madrids.
You do. I'll hold up the race card. Ladies' Day here at Cheltenham today. And I think we'll have a big crowd. And I spoke to Declan Queeley from Waterford last week at Nice, and he has a horse called I'll Sort That in the first race. This is the Turner's Novices Hurdle. And you got 22 runners, and Declan Queeley knows the time of day. He says it's the best horse he's ever had. There's a bit of money for it, into 16-1, 18-1, and it'd be great to see him win. It's a lovely story about the King brothers from Cork. Daniel King, the young jockey, and Connor King, his brother, who's only got two horses in training. One of them is a horse called Oscar's Brother. And he runs in the second race, which is the Brown Advisory Novices Chase. So Oscar's Brother is a very talented animal. He's won a couple of grade two races. And JB McManus bought him. JB McManus on his 75th birthday yesterday had a couple of winners with Saratoga and Johnny Who. But Oscar's Brother, bought by JB McManus, obviously thought a lot of for the King brothers. Connor's training down in Tipperary and Cashel, but both from Cork and around from the Mallow area. So that's great to see. And then, as you say, you have the Willie Mullins has 25 runners today. 25 runners on day two at Cheltenham, including the Bumper, which he's won 14 times since it was introduced in 1992. He's got Love Sign Danu, who was a very easy winner the last time. Might want softer ground. It was about 1.5 millimeters of rain overnight here, not as much as they expected. So the ground is dry now all the time, and the going has changed from good to soft to good to soft to good in places. But he's got Irish Avatar in there. He's got Kieran in there, who's a four-year-old. Like Willie Mullins in the first race, has Sober in there. He has King Roscoe Gray, Sortudo in the second race. He's Kay Duffy, who won very well at Leopardstown last time out. Final Demand, who was a very talented novice hurdler. And then the Queen Mother Champion Chase is the big one with Mashborough. The big hope for JB McManus and William Mullins. McManus, strangely enough, has never won the race. One of the championship races here at Cheltenham as an owner. Mashborough, three times last season in the Arkle Chase, made mistakes and it cost him the race. And we saw with Kopec de Bordeaux de Lamba yesterday that mistakes can cost you. It is called National Hunt racing after all. So Mashborough has to have a clear round. He jumped much better at Leopardstown last time out. And Tony McCoy, who I was speaking to last week at the official launch here at Cheltenham, thinks he's different, thinks he's a bit of a special horse. So if Mashborough can jump around in a good rhythm, he should win the Champion Chase. But there are other, as you say, once again, outsiders in this with chances like Edward and Patrick Harty, don't have many horses, father and son combination, and they sent Irish Panther to the Champion Chase today. That horse has got a bit of an each way chance too.
Okay, so plenty of people to get stuck into today. You're live from 10 o'clock this morning. The podcast will drop at 11:30 in the podcast feed. Is there a nap for the breakfast viewers?
There's always a nap. We will never disappoint the breakfast viewers, folks. And I've been talking about this horse probably since Christmas because I went to Leopardstown, my one jolly of the year. That's a joke. where we had Leopardstown last day. There was a horse called Keep Him Company. And Josh Williamson, Norman's son, rode him. And to win the champion bumper here at Cheltenham, you need a stayer. You need almost like a 3-mile chaser because the hill here is very punishing for horses effectively what is a 2-mile flat race. And Keep Him Company at Leopardstown responded for pressure and won going away. He's about 6.5 to 1, 7 to 1. He's the colours of Michael O'Leary, who's never won the bumper. I think he's a rock solid each way best. Jack Kennedy, one of the best jockeys out there, rides for Gordon Elliott. Keep Him Company each way is the nap of the day in the last race, the bumper today. And probably my fancy of the whole festival, to be honest.
All right, okay. Take it on William Patrick in the bumper. That is a brave man, John, but we expect nothing
Come
less.
Come on. Come on.
Enjoy and forget about Spurs. They don't exist.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Good luck. Have a good day. Did you get sucked in yesterday?
No.
Oh, I did.
I was trying to get sucked in and then other things happened and...
life got in the way.
Did you ever look at any of those that... No?
I had a late each way...
A nibble.
That got... I backed plenty of losers. That saw me roughly break even.
I'll try and put that right today. The Centenary Quatch? Or the Presbury Cup Chair?
The Centenary Quatch is the Ireland-Scotland.
Not amuse.
No one really cares about the... It'd be good if England won, right?
Yeah, it would be. 4-3 up.
It would make the rivalry good again. It's like, it's boring beating Scotland 13 times in a row. So 12 is enough.
Yeah, well...
Somebody in the comments is like, well, actually, your record against New Zealand is like 20-odd and against the record number of defeats against Australia it was in 17 or 18. So it was plenty of time for us to get all the way to the next World Cup, and then in the next cycle they can start beating us when we go 50-50 and you're like, happy days.
Yeah. Be interesting to see what happens, yeah.
Scottish arrogance you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. Scottish arrogance. Darcy Graham has been out and it's been well reported about. Where's the actual quote now that I've
I think
done
we actually have, we have the
Do
audio.
We have the clip?
Yeah, we have it, yeah. Okay. So we can play. Here's Darcy Graham. Look, you know, you got to remember that rugby is very intense, right? Rugby, there's not much of a sense of humour when it comes to... You know, anything. It's like, oh, you said this about us.
Well, what's your thing? Never give a sucker an even break.
Yeah. So, Darcy Graham was asked about it.
Yeah. And what he said was that... Bum, bada, bum, bum, bum.
Oh, let me essentially, you rightly pointed back 2023.
There is a bit of context to this. The exact quote is not all that complex.
Blair Kinghorn was asked in 2023.
Darcy Graham says, "I think they're there for the taking." That's his. So there was a slightly few quotes around that, but I think they're there for the taking was the thing. You know, we're bristling with confidence.
The blood's up.
All they used to be, and I think they're there for the taking. I just think that, like,
in 2023, Blair Kinghorn said that we're going to end that.
He said, it's win or go home. This is the World Cup. It's win or go home. Everyone's pumped for it. They've been on a good run of form recently, but we'll end that on Saturday.
Yeah.
And there was much commentary about it at the time. I just feel like...
We went out and smashed them.
Yeah. It might have been the Six Nations. It was, I'm pretty sure, the Six Nations that year. Was that the first year, 23, of the Netflix documentary, whose name of which I can't quite remember? Stuart Hogg, who has hit the headlines for various other untoward reasons subsequently, said, we're due these efforts, one, we're going to lift the Triple Crown and have a shit ton of fun doing it, so let's effing go for it. You know, so, like, listen, that's bloods up, pre we go out and all that sort of stuff. But there is a bit of, what would you call it? Daring do, Jerry, you might offer into the conversation here, but there is, like, we've talked often about a touch of arrogance.
Do you remember Northampton against Leinster in pre-game? Northampton were saying, they're not like us, they're not the same as us. You know, we're a community, and it's like everybody at Leinster essentially had come through the academy, yes, apart from like their two international superstars, three. The winners write the history, the losers get pilloried for saying stuff. I think what Darcy Graham said is totally legitimate. They're like manifesting in a press conference as opposed to lying about stuff. Anyway, Andrew Goodman was asked about it yesterday. Have a look at this.
Darcy Graham, Breton's, you're there for the taking this weekend. What would you say to that?
Again, like, they've earned the right to be confident from the way they played, to put 50 points on a French team that were flying high and everyone was saying is unbeatable in this competition. They've earned the right to have confidence and belief in their game. So just like, yeah, it's adding to the occasion of the game. We take massive pride in playing at home in front of our people. So it's our job to make sure they come here and they don't get to play that brand of rugby at our home ground. That's our challenge.
See, when he gets asked that question,
is it a little
could
glimmer?
You see the
you
little?
Could, you could actually see it.
Just a touch, yeah. And he's like, put that back in the box. Don't give them an inch. And I think that's the key bit here, because if I'm Darcy Graham's teammates, you would never hear Tupilato coming out with something like that. I just think, while I understand your point, I also think, don't give them an inch. Why are you giving them some? Ireland are 100% going to lean into that at the weekend. Yeah. I'm not saying it's the grain of rice. But maybe it is a grain of rice. It is certainly a grain of rice. And why would you give it to them?
I think because Razzie plays videos of everybody saying stuff about them, and because South Africa won, everybody thinks this is the, you know, it's the old school dressing room all. But actually, South Africa won because they're the best team. They didn't win because we.
Well, it's just
we
you
gave them shit.
That he puts.
No, there was loads of people. There was like hours and hours of footage.
The players care. The players care about this Scotland thing. They deeply care about the Scotland thing. There is in some cases a dislike of this Scotland arrogance.
So 13 Scots and 18 Irish men went on the Lions this year. That's all gone. There's no way that they can get that
back.
Oh,
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think so at all. And
they love Finn Russell. They think, wow, look at him. He's one of us.
I think they believe that Scotland are arrogant with very little reason for it. Tom English, who's a regular and brilliant contributor to these parts of the BBC, has written on the topic.
He thinks we're insane.
He wrote a piece on the BBC website that is absolutely worth checking out. It's a version of what he said with us probably over the last couple of times he's been on. Irish rugby folk never waste an opportunity to brand Scotland as arrogant losers, even when there's zero evidence of it. I don't know if he's talking about the arrogance bit or the losing bit, because there's an awful lot of evidence on that side. This annual casting of the Scots as a collection of players who are good at talking a game without ever delivering one is an odd phenomenon. Now, I give you Blair Kinghorn, I give you Stuart Hogg, and now in the 2026 chapter, I give you Darcy Graham.
Like, the problem that the club matches matter so little to so few people, that these games are so heightened,
yeah,
that everything is outsized and cartoonish. Whereas actually, if people paid more attention to the club games, they're really good. And
but there's a lot of spice also between Munster and Glasgow, and has been over the years. And like, I specifically remember in the possibly mid 2010s, the three B's, the Scottish back row, Barclay, Beattie, Brown, and how the Irish players, particularly the back row at that time, used to absolutely bristle at this idea of
that
the three B's, and that there was this collective and there were this great thing, and they were like, so it fed into this idea of arrogance. So I don't think there's zero evidence that Scotland are arrogant.
Well, okay. It just feels like too much is made of it. And ultimately, I don't know, is rugby still so... I just don't buy that my motivation is the thing that's going to win this game. Yeah. I actually think that our tactical and quality is the thing that's going to be more important in the long run. The team with the better players and the best coaching and who executes best is going to beat the team who are like, oh, I'm mad because you gave me a...
I do think that's totally true. Equally, why do you think when... I didn't actually pick up who the reporter was. Lobs that over and Andrew Goodman's
Keane
director.
Tracy.
Keane Tracy. He just straight bats it back off the pitch because he doesn't want to give them an inch.
Well, because he's also not the boss. You know, if that's Andy Farrell, Andy Farrell can say what he wants, right?
But Andy Farrell doesn't go. I'll tell you another thing. He says the version.
You know that they were like, look, in advance, you're going to get asked this.
Yeah.
Are you prepared for that? Try out your answer on me there.
Yeah.
And the laugh could have been like, oh, you prepped me for this, as opposed to, oh, he's giving us one there. We're going to win because of that.
I think it's an acknowledgement. It's an Andrew Goodman going, well played, sir. I expected this question and thank you for offering it up to me. And absolutely. I do think it will help motivate the Ireland players. There has to be other factors.
Maybe.
There has to be a quality thing.
Maybe.
But it's going up on the dressing room wall.
Yeah, does it work for everybody? I don't know. I definitely am like, okay, grand. So what that guy said, we couldn't have won this game without him saying that.
I don't think that. But it's a grain of rice.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50-milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150-milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.